Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 11 of The Front Three. My name is Adam Boltwood. Joining me as always is the one and only Lawrence McKenna. That's your cue to say something.
Welcome back.
And of course, we've also got the stat man himself, Dave O'Brien.
Hello.
Hello, how's it going?
Yeah, all right. I took a ball to the eye in five-a-side today, so I might have a bit of a black eye coming tomorrow.
But, I'm glad you clarified in five-a-side there. But what happened then? Someone just smacked it at your face.
I was in goal, so we do shifts in goal, 15 minutes, and I just took one square in the face, unlucky.
Square in the face, yeah.
But Dave, that's the difference between you and Adam, right? When Adam's not on the podcast, he's taking an E. When you're off the podcast, you're taking a ball to the face.
these are accusations that are flying around here, Lawrence. It's about my recent holiday in Barcelona, where
Trying to scare off any potential sponsors.
Oh yeah, they're well scaled up. I won't worry about that. Listen, it's good to be back. I was away on holiday last week. Did you miss me?
You know what? Dave and I really enjoyed having Messi on. Messi,
yeah,
seconds.
He was up. Joe, yeah, big thanks to Joe. He stepped in. He did a very good job. It was a good listen on the way back. I was listening on the plane back.
Really? Yeah. Mr. International. You're like Pitbull.
Well,
Mr. Worldwide.
Not exactly. I doubt Pitbull travels via Ryanair. But anyway, it's Lawrence, you're the only one who hasn't missed an episode now. Me and Dave have now missed an episode each. And you're the only one.
Try my best.
You're like John Terry of the podcast, just appearing every time so far.
Holding.
And a complete dick when he's not doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, but so I wonder if you're going to appear in every single episode ever. When hypothetically this podcast may end one day,
never.
10, 20 years or something.
When we're in old people's home, the three of us just sitting around like, I don't know. I told you there'd be another Messi.
Exactly.
20 years. Maybe
you might have done every episode, Lawrence. You might be the only one of the front three to have done every single episode. Anyway, listen. Welcome to episode 11. Thank you once again for listening, whether it's on iTunes or SoundCloud or elsewhere. Thank you for sending all your nice comments. The comment of the week this week is going to go to Eduardo Tardi, who said, "I love listening to your podcast on Wednesday afternoons while playing FIFA."
That conjures up a lovely image, doesn't it?
It's a great way to spend your time. You're sitting there having a nice game of FIFA, listening to some great chat, going on. Well done, Eduardo, is all I can say.
Do you normally have a FIFA playlist? Because, when I don't really play FIFA as much, I have to admit, but I used to have a couple of songs that if I just put them on, they'd make me play good. Do you know what I mean?
No, that is not something I've experienced, but I'd love to know if that happens for someone else. I usually just listen to the music in the game. The music's quite good.
I'm not a fan.
It's usually quite good in the game, I thought.
I used to like it, but it's not the same anymore.
It's just not the same
too poppy for me. Too poppy.
Hey, it's all about the new Jamie XX album. Definitely get that on whilst you're playing FIFA. Great combination.
Mate, I'm still...
I saw him in Barcelona, mate. I saw him at the music festival.
Did you really?
Not a big deal, mate. Not a big deal.
Are you sure you saw him, or were you just on an E?
Well, yeah, I could have. While I was on all of... No.
All of the E's.
I was high on nothing but life, Lance, is what I'll say.
It looked lovely. Your Facebook photos look incredible. Anyway, yeah, thanks a lot for your comments. And also, thanks a lot for all the people that did research last week as well. Dave.
Big shout out to Javier Favela for giving us the old Mexican, four, three numbers on your back of your shirt. Lovely stuff. Thanks, Javier.
Because last week we were talking about what number you would have, and we can find out from you as well, Adam. what number you would have on the back of your shirt if you couldn't have a conventional squad number. So say you got to the team and they were like, oh, sorry, you know, you can't have, you know, 16, or, you know, because Sebastian Coates has got it. And you'd be like, well, tell him not to have it because I'll be first team. And they go, no, he's got it. And you're like, okay, well, I'll take the number.
Well, when you say conventional, are we talking about 1 to 21 or something?
I said I'd take 83 because it was my grandma's house number when I was a kid. What would you, you know, like Dave would take, what did you take, Dave? 69?
45.
Why did you say 45? Why 45?
Oh, it's a pretty boring one again. Day of the month, the 4th, and then it's the 5th month, May. Pretty boring.
Yeah, no.
Standard. Yeah, you're right, Dave, it is boring. Yeah.
Sorry, guys, sorry for wasting your time.
Yeah, I'd have three, 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 front three, three on the back, 333.
You wouldn't get number 33, surely?
No, I get 333 because there's three of us, front three. You know,
good.
It would say, the word would read front, and then the numbers would be 333, which is sort of be quite confusing. But
good. Yeah, it'd be very. What's front the three? What's the front 333? Mate, that's not even a formation.
Hey, listen, it made sense before I realised what I'd said.
Imagine if you got 442, or you got 433 or something.
433. Yeah, see, that's good. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Anyway, let us know.
I wish I'd thought about that before I said it. But anyway, listen. If you,
I wish I'd thought before words came out my mouth.
Before I said this thing. If you want to let us know what unconventional shirt number you'd have, or if you want to, you know, give us some suggestions or ask us any questions, you can find us on Twitter at the front three with the number three and not the word. Anyway, listen, let's get on with it. The first thing we've got to talk about is the news. Full disclosure, we are recording this on a Monday night for various reasons. So it might be old news by the time you're listening to this, but we have to talk about Petr Cech. So Arsenal finally signed the 33-year-old after months of speculation, reported £10 million fee. So, Dave, I'll come to you first. Gunners fans very happy at the moment. Özil-esque reactions on Twitter. So how big of a signing do you think this is for Arsenal?
It's absolutely massive. You look at the last time they had a pretty decent keeper, Jan Zalayman, you'd say, you know, they got to the Champions League final, they were performing in the league, they won the league in that time, they went on the unbeaten run. It's absolutely huge. You know, I mentioned it, I think it's for the past like two seasons that I've mentioned that Arsenal need a top class keeper. And in Petr Cech, they've got a brilliant keeper. You look at his stats, he's got the best saves to shot ratio in the Premier League at 78%. He's got the best minutes per goal conceded rate in the Premier League at 123 minutes per goal. And he has the best win rate of any Premier League goalkeeper at 66%. The guy is, you'd probably say, a Premier League legend. He's definitely up there. Obviously, you mentioned before about his clean sheet record. You know, most in one Premier League season and then the most for a single club by any goalkeeper in Premier League history. He's fantastic.
Lawrence, what about you? What do you reckon? Is this finally going to be the signing where, you know, we can say Arsenal are going to challenge next season? I know we say it every year, but, you know, signing Cech, goalkeepers have been a weakness for Arsenal for a long, long time.
Yeah, they have been a weakness. And we, you know, we did speak in some sort of depth about, you know, the way that they need to create a unit and those kind of things. And, you know, Joel said he wasn't really so convinced whether he was going to be, you know, the best signing of the summer or whether he was even going to be some sort of revolutionary signing for Arsenal. I think he's definitely an upgrade on what they have. But what I would be interested to see is how he fits in with that back line as a unit and whether he manages as, you know, a goalkeeper and taking his own, bear in mind that he takes his own goalkeeping coach where he goes with him. So, you know, it's looked like he was on the cards to be there for a little while because Arsenal's goalkeeping coach, I think, left last week. And basically what I want to acknowledge in this is, you know, his international record as well. And I think it would be interesting to see, you know, when he does have a changing front line or people who he isn't maybe so familiar with, or maybe he's been attacked a bit more. And, you know, obviously it's going to be a different style of defence at Arsenal to the one at Chelsea because they aren't as sturdy in the back or haven't been. It'll be interesting to see how much of a factor the goalkeeper was in that and whether it's, you know, all personnel or just having a good guy behind them to organise them and read the game just as well, you know, because he was sat behind John Terry and Cavalier for quite a long time. He was sat behind quite a few good partnerships. And as you know, he did do very well. But I wonder, you know, what was that down to? I'm not doubting him, but I'm just saying, you know, if there are questions to be asked, then, you know, those are the angles we should be looking at.
Dave, what do you reckon, or what do you make of all the behind the scenes aspects to this deal. So obviously Jose Mourinho, you'd imagine, didn't want to sell Petr Cech to a direct rival, and his public quotes kind of back that up. But at the end of the day, it seems Cech wanted to stay in London, and Roman Abramovich was happy to sanction the move kind of as a almost a goodwill gesture to a player who was integral to so much of the success of the club in recent years. So do you think, you know, Chelsea and, you know, Abramovich may regret this move, or do you think it was the right thing for them to do to let him join, you know, a club who may well be challenging them for the title next season?
It was a brilliant, you know, it was brilliant from Chelsea in a way. Petr Cech's obviously been a fantastic servant, you know, letting him stay in London with his kids and his family. It's a nice thing to do, and we don't see that enough in football, you know, teams sort of paying players back for their service. But, you know, going back to that competitiveness, it's going to be a bit of a, you know, I think it's a mistake letting Petr Cech stay in the Premier League in terms of, you know, Mourinho knows that he's an absolute winner. He didn't want Cech in the Premier League for obvious reasons. Cech probably, you know, he's up there, probably top three goalkeepers. You look at Courtois, David De Gea at the moment, Premier League goalkeeper, and Petr Cech. So you'd say they're the top three. So it's going to be interesting for Chelsea. It'll be quite good if sort of Wenger beats Mourinho for the first time in the Community Shield and Petr Cech sort of saves the day in that. It'll be quite interesting. But I do think it's a brilliant signing for Arsenal. And a very silly sale for Chelsea in a way.
Can I just say that's utter bollocks, by the way? I mean, I'll say it's utter bollocks. I've just got doubts as to whether how much of it is goodwill towards Petr Cech, or they just couldn't stop him from leaving and realise that.
But you can. Just sort of surely they could, stop him from leaving.
They could have sold him.
They might have not sold him.
They could have just not sold him.
Yeah, but you know, I think essentially what we have to acknowledge here is that that's a wonderful bit of PR from Chelsea, and, you know, a number of people willing to back that up, as opposed, you know, because he wasn't an integral member of the squad. They realise that they have to conform to FFP. They realise there are other pressures on them now, and he's probably quite a high earner within the squad in relative terms for saying he's not playing as much as, you know, he would probably like to be. You know, Mourinho probably realises his influence at that point. If he didn't want to be there, maybe how that, you know, even though he is actually quite a loyal goalkeeper and, you know, quite a professional personality, how much of that's going to take away from the title challenge. And I think there's more to it. But basically, again, because it's Chelsea, they say it and we eat that shit up. We don't question it. So we just go, oh, yeah, cool. Of course. No, of course, Roman Abramovich is going to give him a goodwill gesture. Yeah.
I disagree. They could have sold him anywhere. They could have sold him to Madrid. They need a keeper. They could have sold him to PSG. They need a keeper. Inter Milan may not need a keeper. AC Milan need a keeper. Potentially, you know, their keeper was pretty dog last season. I think that they could have sold him abroad 100%. You know, if someone like PSG could have come in with, you know, 16 million quid. You know, they could have sold him there. I think that it was a goodwill gesture. And I like to believe these stories, Lawrence, because it makes you feel better with your life.
I think it's telling that Petr Cech thanked Roman Abramovich after completing the move. I don't think...
You think it's telling that he thanked someone who's basically a dangerous criminal? what a telling gesture.
No, but
yeah,
I mean...
Oh, yeah, you're right. Well,
you seem to be questioning the fact that it was a goodwill gesture. All right. Regardless of Abramovich's personality. But, you know, the player himself came out and said, I spoke to Mr. Abramovich about staying in the Premier League. I'd like to thank him for his support in the matter. So I think, you know, that sort of says it all, really.
No, we do. It's a charade, and we I think very often we do eat it all up because, you know, people are more than happy to play into that sometimes. And you know, I'd argue that we don't.
Most of the things Mourinho says, people don't eat up, and they always do take with a pinch of salt. The famous one I'm thinking of last season when he said, you know, or the season before, sorry, when he was saying his team are like a little horse, you know, and everyone was just like, he's talking rubbish.
But that's not the important thing. It doesn't matter. That's the whole point. Is Marie? It's like being a magician. He's waving over here, going, "Look, we're a little horse," but they're not questioning the important things.
Okay, I see what he's saying, but I don't see how that's related to this in terms of. It's almost got nothing to do, Mourinho, this one, saying it's a goodwill gesture.
But I'm saying the overall image of the club is one that has very much been shaped by Mourinho. And the perception is of people in powerful positions, men in powerful positions, people who won't question a Russian billionaire, but people who will question the very same billionaires from another country and whether they know about the culture, et cetera, et cetera. And I do think there's an element of... fear around the hierarchy at Chelsea.
Well,
that's what I'm saying.
There you have it.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and
You don't sound that one.
What I'm saying is we should question these things, or at least say, you know, was it a goodwill gesture, or, you know, does he just have to say, you know, does he have to save the face of the club in order to get the move that he wants?
Yeah, that's a good point. I prefer to take the less cynical view, but
I see
why.
Say I like this view, therefore I'm going.
No,
to.
But I'd say in this particular case, the evidence points to, you know, let's take it at face value. I'd
say.
Men
involved have said this, therefore it is.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I agree, Lawrence. I agree.
So we're going to move on to Sergio Ramos. Now, this is another. This could be all a conspiracy because, you know, they're saying, you know, this could all be a manufactured story to get Ramos a new contract at Real Madrid. But at the time of recording, Sky Sports, that ever reliable source, reporting that he's told Real Madrid he wants to leave after Manchester United made a £28.6 million bid. So this one's been rumbling on for a week or so now. I know you guys talked about it last week in depth, but, you know, is this going to happen now? It seems like it's getting ever increasingly, it's gone from some, you know, spurious rumour to, okay, it's looking pretty likely now.
I think that it probably, I don't know. It's 50-50 right now for me. Either he'll get a new deal this week or he'll sign for Man United, and that's how it's either going to go.
Because it's interesting that all of the stories that are coming out of Spain, you know, it's all that he's fallen out of with the president, and, you know, the Pro Madrid papers are not, they're not spinning it in a way that, you know, we need to keep Ramos, you know, what a player. It seems more like the relationship with the club is beyond the, it's gone beyond the point of return.
Beyond repair in a way.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, this player is going to leave. You know, the fan polls in Marca were sort of saying, you know, they'd prefer to see him gone. They'd prefer to see the back of him. You know, he's been painted as this player who's not loyal and is kind of, you know, not fighting for the badge is what they've sort of been suggesting. So I can't see how it is a play for a contract when all aspects of the media are sort of reporting it in this fashion. You know, they're reporting it in the way that it is gonna happen. I mean, Lawrence, what do you think, if it does happen, that it's a good move for Manchester United? He's 29 years old, Ramos, for £28.6 million, almost 30. Is that good business?
I guess that's what I'm questioning here, is are there better options for United? But it does seem a little bit of a quick fix to me. I mean, I know a quick fix, but it would, if he was a more reasonable price, I guess it wouldn't seem like such a quick fix. I feel like anything over 30 seems a bit exorbitant for a player who's 28, 29, hasn't really played outside of his country on a consistent basis. And at times, when he's joined teams who also look like they're very low on confidence, which is arguably not this side, then, you know, there have been question marks over his mentality, etc. So, yeah, I think there are still question marks. There's no doubting what he can do at his peak, but I think there are doubts around Ramos when there are other things going on. Let's put it that way. And so, I mean, someone on another show I was on last week said, you know, he dragged Real Madrid to the Champions League final, and I thought, yeah, he really dragged a side full of multi-million-pound players.
Lawrence, look at the goals. So Real Madrid were 1-0 on aggregate up. Away at Bayern Munich, he scored two goals in the first 30 minutes from headers from corners. In a way, that is showing what you can do. You know, fair enough, they won 4-0 in the end of the game, but you've got to get that lead. In those games, you've got to get the lead.
I mean, you know, fair enough.
You know, he has. He's carried them at times, defensively, 100%.
But this is what I'm saying, Dave. Is look at that, though. What do you really want? I mean, I know he's a great player, and he is a good player, but does that make him worth £45 million?
I'd say no. I'd agree with you that he doesn't. He's definitely, you know, at his age, he's not worth £45 million. You should be looking to sign young players at the moment. I'd always go down the line of signing young, talented players, bringing them through the club, and going that way. But like you said before, it's quite a good quick fix in terms of defenders, you know. He's probably top five defenders in the world, like I mentioned last week. I'd like to sign him. I also, going back to just thinking of, you know, friends again in Madrid, mentioned second shout out they're going to get this season or this season break. They speak of him as quite a basic player. He's quite a basic chap off the pitch. So maybe that now he has come out and he has said that he wants to go, he will actually go through with it. You know, that could be a definite angle down it, that he's quite a basic lad, committed, you know, he's fallen out of the club, that's it, it's over. The relationship is gone.
Well, I also find that very interesting. I mean, that it's not worrying in that sense, but I mean, for someone who's played a very long time at a club, you wonder why he's so adamant to leave.
I agree.
Dave, the Schneiderlin deal is the other deal that's kind of another one that's been the last week or so, you know, on the verge of happening. People are reporting. So, you know, if Manchester United sign Memphis Depay, Morgan Schneiderlin and Sergio Ramos, potentially before the transfer windows even open officially on July the 1st, I mean, are you happy with that business?
It's absolutely brilliant business. I think Morgan Schneiderlin is one of the... He's now becoming rated, but before, you know, the start of last season, he was probably one of the most underrated midfielders in the Premier League defensively. And I think that's what United need, is a defensive midfielder that can win tackles, that can intercept the ball. And that's exactly what Schneiderlin can do. If you're looking at the sort of system that we played last season, it would probably work really nice if we had Carrick sitting, Schneiderlin as sort of the left centre midfielder, and then Herrera on the right-hand side. That would be absolutely perfect. You know, you've got Schneiderlin to cover Depay. Depay is a player that likes to stay wide on the counter attack. You've got to have someone to do his running, and Morgan Schneiderlin can do that. What another thing that his game's improved in the last few seasons is goals. I think he scored 4 goals this season in the Premier League. That's the same amount that he's managed in the 2 previous seasons combined. Not a massive deal, not a massive amount of goals that he scored, but it shows his improvement that he is getting into the box a bit more and potentially playing him not as the holding midfielder. I think Carrick's got that slot absolutely down if he's fit. Schneiderlin can come in and play a pivotal role, and maybe in more of an attacking sense that we've seen at Southampton. Obviously, at Southampton, he sort of sits next to Wanyama, or he sits next to another defensive midfielder. But maybe it's really interesting. You know, this United side is going to be good next season, I'd say. It's just going to be who's actually going to come in. They're the big questions at the moment. Schneider looks like he's on. Ramos, maybe. Depay. If we sign those three, that is one hell of a window for Man United. That's a better window than we've had, you know, for the last 4 windows, would you say, where we're getting ripped off at these high prices for the likes of Di Maria and that. You know?
Yeah, you're not signings. Overpaying for Ramos.
It depends. I've heard under 30 million. I've heard 28 or 29 million today that was offered. Yeah. If it gets to 45, we are getting ripped off 100%.
These days, you know, for Manchester United, 28 million, I mean, it's probably fair enough for Ramos. Slightly over the odds, but
yeah,
that's the place we're at the moment in the transfer market. Still on United, Bastian Schweinsteiger's apparently sort of played down any move to Old Trafford, sort of saying he wants to win a 4th straight league title with Bayern Munich. So that could be the end of that. Those rumours stop dead. Dave, what do you make of the apparent interest in Seamus Coleman? This was something that came about on the weekend. Again, Sky Sports saying that Manchester United are interested in signing the Everton defender. Obviously, right back is a little bit of a weakness for United. They were playing Valencia there last season. Raphael sort of seems to be almost surplus to requirements. So, I mean, do you think Seamus Coleman's the man who can come in and sort of make that position his own?
Yeah, well, definitely. If he came in, he's a brilliant player going forward defensively. Potentially, he might have questions there, but he's very tenacious. He gets up and down the wings very well, which we've lacked someone that can sort of put the yards in since probably, you know, Patrice Evra left last season. I do think he, you know, potentially could be exposed in Europe. You know, he's not been tested out in the Champions League. Potentially get targeted that way. But he is a fantastic individual. I would have preferred Klein, but obviously we'll probably talk about the Liverpool stuff later on. But Seamus Coleman, definitely in terms of his goal and assist output, I think he's just behind Leighton Baines in terms of the last 2 seasons of that output. So he's a good player. You know, he can beat a man 1v1. He'll give us an attacking option down that side, which will be good. It's just interesting. It seems like we're half interested in some players and then we back off when the deal's going through. I don't know whether that's just the media playing and having a bit of fun. You know, I think he'll be a good, very good player. Another point, though, quickly, just Raphael. He's only 24. He's crazy. Like, why? Obviously, Van Gaal.
Do you rate him?
I think Raphael's a very, very good player when he gets his run of games. I think in that 2012-13 season, where he won the Premier League, he was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. But it's his fitness that is letting him down. And under Moyes, Moyes didn't like him. And now LVG comes in. When Raphael's played, he's been pretty decent. But he's been injured, and that's the problem. And obviously, one big thing that I remember was Raphael, actually, I think he got sent off against LVG's Bayern Munich a few seasons ago. Maybe Van Gaal doesn't trust him. I'm not sure.
From the one memory that he has despite seeing him in training more recently. Oh, I remember when you got sent off a few years ago, mate.
I think Van Gaal's one of those players where he's happy with you, or one thing will just turn him, and that'll be it. And there's no coming back from that. And that's, I think, how that relationship's going.
Finally,
the best managers have that, yeah.
Finally, on United, Phil Jones has signed a new contract until 2019. Good news, Dave. Well, not that fast.
It's fantastic news. You know, he's a young English player. I think he needs to develop. You know, there's a lot of the things happened this season in terms of him getting caught out of position and so forth. You know, the moment against Arsenal where he did the fish. You know, he's got to work on that. He's got to be better than that. He's got to be more composed. You look at the top young centre halves in world football. They're composed. They know what's going on. Phil Jones just needs to bring that into his game. I think Phil Jones definitely has more potential than Chris Smalling, 100%. But I think Phil Jones, again, like Raphael, needs a run of games, and he needs to be in the team for a whole season. It's said in the media so much. He needs to just do it, and it's got to be this season. But also tactically, I like that we've kept him on. Obviously, he did a pretty good job against Gareth Bale a few seasons ago. You know, Fergie used to use him as a central midfielder to some avail. So yeah, I like him. Don't like him at right back. Like him at centre back or central midfield.
There you go. Speaking of right backs, Liverpool are set to sign Nathaniel Clyne from Southampton for around $12.5 million. That'll probably be done by the time you're listening to this. So Lawrence, as the resident Liverpool fan, how are you feeling about this deal? Nothing.
Which deals am I not supposed to be happy about?
What's your reaction to Nathaniel Clyne? Are you overjoyed, overcome with just pure emotion that he signed for Liverpool?
Liverpool fans have been looking, overcome with pure emotion about signing Nathaniel Clyne. Liverpool fans have been looking for a right back for quite some time, probably since Arbour left, I think. Mainly because, you know, Glenn Johnson has showed spurts of going forward well, but never been defensively solid. And, you know, really, at times, he covered for that because he was so attacking that he pushed people back. And it basically meant that it was very difficult for other teams to play against that. So they always needed to, they were always pushed back. But against teams that exploited it, it always made it very difficult. And I'm interested to see, especially, I mean, David, I don't know what you think about the stats with Nathaniel Clyne, but, you know, kind of, his successful tackle, etc., but also how well he gets forward, how quickly he gets the ball out of defence, all those things, I think, make him a Brendan Rodgers system kind of guy.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's a fantastic signing. United should have gone in for him, really, to be honest, to solve their right-back problem, but obviously he's gone to Liverpool. It's nice to see Liverpool getting players like this. Obviously, I love the rivalry between United and Liverpool, obviously, you know, the history and that type of thing, but in terms of stats, I think he's attempted more tackles than any other defender in the Premier League last season, which is that's a good stat to have. You know, he attacks. You know, if a player's got the ball and is running at him, he'll go for them and he'll try and win the ball off them. I think he's very, very good at going forward. He could probably improve his assists, you'd say that, and the chances that he creates. Quite good at whipping a ball in. I think he's brilliant. His tactical flexibility is what Brendan is going to love. Obviously, last season for Southampton, he played a sort of they were playing a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1. He was playing properly right back, or they were playing a 3-5-2 and he was playing right wing back. You know, Brendan likes his flexible players, and Clyne has that. Young, talented, quick, a brilliant signing.
In other transfer news, Tottenham look like starting to get rid of the dead weight, as it were. They've sold Paulinho to, going to have a go at this, Guangzhou Evergrande, the Chinese Super League side, for $9.9 million, which is not a bad return on the $16 million or so that we spent on him.
not a bad return, and that's how you rate a player. This, my friends, is football.
The Ozil-esque reactions I mentioned about Pedicek earlier were matched by Spurs fans who were equally happy to have seen the back of Paulinho.
I don't know how you've done that.
Brilliant.
How have you got that? How have you got that?
You know what, guys?
How have you done it?
I have no idea. It's
brilliant. Well, it's probably from the fact that you've never fucking played him is part of the problem.
Yeah, I don't mind Paulinho, to be honest.
I don't mind him either.
He didn't get much of a chance last season, so it feels harsh to sort of say, you know, he was a complete failure. But it seems like we are trying
You're talking such shit. Well, so 10 million's not a bad return on a player that never played, considering that, you know, we spent 16 on him and then he never really played.
It feels harsh for the Spurs fans acting like we've just a lot of Spurs fans on Twitter acting like we've done some incredible deal.
It's the Levy way, you know, buy them high, sell them low. We're planning on doing it with a few other players, actually. It's good business, business.
I would say it's never good business to have lost 6 million on a player within 2 years. it's not the best business decision I've ever
and
seen
in my life. Really high amounts on his wages.
I think it capitalises how poorly, you know, we spent that bail money 2 years ago. I still can't get over it. Because I remember when we were signing all these players, and the media was sort of hyping us up as title rivals.
Brendan Rodgers was having his go, eh?
Brendan Rodgers saying, if you spend 100 million, you should be winning the league, yeah. Which obviously he didn't quite live up to. But so Paulinho's gone. Roberto Soldado is apparently in talks every move to Galatasaray.
What a profit you're making on him.
Yeah, well, that's going to be some loss, I'd imagine. That's going to be at least 10 million loss.
At least 20, yeah.
At least 10, but more likely 15.
We burned a good 15 million there, but it was a good 15 million.
I don't think that'll get quite the same reaction on Twitter. But Etienne Capoue as well is up for sale. Vlad Chirikez. So it kind of looks like Christian Eriksen was the only really undoubted success that we signed. I mean, Nasser Chadli obviously has done fairly well. You know, last season he scored a lot of goals, made a lot of assists. Eric Lamela, not so much. He did score one Rabona in off season, which people loved.
But that was worth 10.
Yeah, that's at least 10. And he's apparently up for sale. He is the most expensive signing in Spurs history, Eric Lamela, £30 million. Just unbelievable, isn't it? It's not going too well for Spurs at the moment. The good news is that we're apparently in for Benteke again. You know, it was a player I've been saying we should sign for a long time. Apparently, we're going to offer up Emmanuel Adebayor as a make weight in the deal. You know, who wouldn't want Adebayor is all I can say. Villa would be mad to turn that down.
I've heard Liverpool are offering Ricky Lambert and Fabio Barini as part of an exchange deal.
Today. Yeah, but then you've also got people saying Barini's going to West Ham. So it's all, you know, the rumour mill is in overdrive at the moment. Even though
I'd love to see Barini do well. But Barini, you know, Barini's done very little wrong, and Liverpool as an institution has done him badly, I think.
What do you make of people saying he could have left last summer but didn't want to take a cut in wages and maybe should have just swallowed that cut in order to go and play first team football somewhere instead of sitting on the bench for a whole season?
I think there's some people out there who are very judgmental, but I think that, you know, to some extent they have a point. If he does want to make his career better, then, you know, he's more than entitled to leave and try and get first team football elsewhere. But he's also entitled to say to the club, you know what, I want to stay and try and earn a place back. So, you know, if you offer him a contract which lasts however long and then he takes you up on that, don't get pissed off when he does it.
it's not his fault that he was earning that much money. So
no. If you make him sign a 4-year or however many year deal, don't be angry when he then goes, I think I'll stay.
Jog my memory. Who was the ultimate player who did that? The Chelsea player who escapes my memory.
John Terry.
No, the one who sat on the bench.
Paulo Ferreira?
No. I want to say Bogard.
No, I want to say Ferreira.
I want to say
Paulo Ferreira.
No, mate, it's Winston Bogard. Do you remember Winston Bogard?
Yeah.
He spent 4 years at Chelsea. He spent 4 years at Chelsea, but he hardly played. He was on 40 grand a week, so he became the classic player who sits on the bench and earns his money and got a lot of stick for it. But he always said, you know, he always sort of said it wasn't my fault, you know. I was just sitting there, you know, not my problem, basically, you know.
I don't know if he's saying that, but I think we do also have to acknowledge, you know, it's a career as well, and, you know, people have their own lives to think about, and, you know, it's the business of football. Yeah, you've got to take the rough with the smooth. And I feel Fabio Barini was very harshly treated by the club and the staff, and, you know, some people in the press as well. So good luck to him.
Yeah, apparently, well, I'm just going back to Bogard there, but yeah, he's regarded by many as the worst signing to have been made by Chelsea.
Ever. Oh, okay.
So they...
yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Sorry, my connection went there. So, is there any other transfer? No, I'm not going to say that again. So, transfer is there any noise? Other transfer news you guys want to discuss? Anything you've heard that you want
to? Arda Turan? Turan possibly on his way to anywhere in the Premier League would be good.
Well, apparently the favourites actually are Paris Saint-Germain. So Arda Turan came out on Twitter a few days ago and sort of said he is in talks, or you know, his agent in talks for 3 or 4 clubs. One of them is assumed to be Paris Saint-Germain. The others are potentially Manchester United, Chelsea. One of them also maybe AC Milan. So, nice. Dave, what do you make of Arda Turan? And do you reckon he'd be a good signing for United or any one of these clubs?
I like him. He's really technically very, very good player, and he works very, very hard for Diego Simeone. And yeah, I just think he's a fantastic team player. Like, you want him in your team. He's a sort of one of those water carriers, but he plays wide. But then technically, he's really good. Can beat a man. Can, you know, create a chance out of nothing. Very, just gifted. Very, very gifted. But it's an interesting. He's 28. You know, I don't know if Atletico are going to get that much money for him. If he went to PSG, that would be quite an interesting fit. You know, they do need workers in their team. They've got a lot of sort of, you'd say, flair players. And they need some... They've got Matuidi that does a lot of graft. But I think having someone like Arda Turan would be a very, very, very intelligent signing for them.
Lawrence, good any point. Thoughts on Arda Turan? Maybe to PSG?
I'm
that's
still
the odds. He's the favourites. PSG had to sign him.
I'd rather see him in the Premier League. I'd love to see him at Liverpool, see how he is as part of a back line. I'd love to see him partner a couple of guys back there. And, you know, I'd love to see the way his style fits into the league. I think we need to see more people like with that kind of, I don't want to call it flair, but sort of that approach. And I'm wondering whether Ramos and Turan coming from La Liga would be a good addition. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I thought Arda Turan was a bastard.
Yeah, which is great. You need more. You need more of those in the Premier League. We're not
bastards.
Stop saying bastard.
Why?
Because it's offensive.
To you?
Yeah. As a bastard, yes. It's offensive to all us bastards, all right?
It's just I feel that that word is so far removed from its actual meaning that surely it's... I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how many people know the literal meaning of the word bastard? Exactly. So,
all right, let's move on, you bastards. Let's go on to the questions.
Speaking of bastards, Phil Neville's gone to Valencia, or at least he's on his way.
Ooh, hold on a second.
Phil Neville, TV's ultimate bastard.
Whoa, will you leave Phil alone? He's going there, and it'll be great for his coaching development to go to a foreign country. I think it's a fantastic move.
Yeah, I've got a lot of admiration for him. I
really like Phil. I've got nothing against. I've got nothing. I was. Just, it was. A
you
joke.
Did just
it
call
was,
him a bastard.
It was Nate. No,
against him, the bastard. But no, he's so he's going to Valencia, assistant manager from next season.
Exactly.
What do you think, Lawrence? You think this is a great move, as Dave's saying? He can expand his footballing horizons.
I'll put it this way: I think it's a better move for Phil than it is for Valencia.
You've summed it up perfectly.
Yeah, essentially. I'm sure he's a lovely guy.
So, I think that's it for transfer news. I mean, unless there's anything
better than his coach.
That's it.
Oh, Firmino.
I thought you mentioned him last week, did you?
No, we mentioned it, but we didn't say where he was going. What I enjoyed was the interim, where basically he signed for Liverpool, and they basically looked at his style and how it fits in with Brendan Rodgers. I think it's a fairly good analysis that he's, you know, he's high pushing, he's pressing, he's high intensity, and I think that's what we were saying as well. So
he's a fantastic player, really is. Going back to I mentioned last week about his direct involvement in goals for Hoffenheim over the last two seasons. He's directly involved in 36% of their goals in the last 2 years. We know about his attacking ability, but what Lawrence mentioned there is his pressing style. He's won 50 tackles in the opposition's half in the last season. Only one player in Europe's top five leagues made more. That's Marco Parolo from Parma. Then you go in the next sort of metric you're looking at in pressing, and you look at interceptions in the opposition half. He's made 28 of them. That's a pretty good return for a forward. You're looking at Victor Sanchez from Espanyol. He's on 51, top in Europe. Obviously, Firmino's a bit further down the list, but that is really, really good. Now, they're really good ball-stealing stats. You listen to anyone from, you know, that watches German football regularly talk about him, and he's a ball stealer. Then you go a bit further, steals the ball, bang, counter-attack. going on to more stats, look at Hoffenheim. They scored 10 goals on the counter-attack last season in the Bundesliga. No team in Europe's top five leagues has managed more. That's fantastic for Liverpool. Liverpool was so good when they came second about hitting people high up the pitch on the break. You know, the Barcelona turnover, the turnover when you can't do anything because they've got three attackers versus your two defenders because they've nicked the ball in midfield. And that's what Firmino will absolutely bring to them. You look at his goal in the German Cup against Dortmund, just broke down the right-hand side and chipped the keeper. It was fantastic. And I do think, you know, Man United fans that are now coming on Twitter saying, oh, we never wanted Firmino, we never wanted him. You're going to see this season that he is a fantastic player. One thing that you can question is in terms of his you know, adapting to Premier League football. Hoffenheim has about 3,000 inhabitants, so it's quite a small place. You know, he's going to Liverpool, a massive, massive city. Will he be able to sort of adapt to Liverpool? I think so, 100%. I really think he's going to be a star of the Premier League this season.
Liverpool's a massive city.
Interestingly, Firmino is now the second most expensive signing in Liverpool's history.
Torres, Firmino.
Quiz question, who was number one?
Torres.
Andy Carroll.
Andy Carroll, Lawrence.
No, it's Torres, guys. We don't remember Andy Carroll. Come on.
But who? Okay, if you're forgetting Andy Carroll. Who is the third most expensive then? First was Andy Carroll, second Firmino. Who is the third most expensive?
Firmino. There's no H in his second name.
Sorry, Firmino. Who is the third most expensive signing in Liverpool's history? Whoever gets it first wins.
Downing.
No, it's not. Lawrence, care to guess?
Okay, let me just quickly...
Don't Google it.
Was it Torres?
It was Adam Lallana.
Interesting. Yeah. We paid more for Adam Lallana than we did for Fernando Torres.
Yeah, you paid 20
of Atletico Madrid.
You paid 20 million for Torres, you paid 25 for Adam Lallana. Southampton captain, I should add.
I think what we're all good point. Yeah. But what we're all missing here is it's a different market now, isn't it, Adam?
You've also got Dejan Lovren, Lazar Markovic and Stuart Downing in the top 10. So, you know, it's almost as it's still better than Tottenham's top 10. I'll give you that.
I think it shows the fantastic savings that Liverpool have managed to make.
The great deals they've done, yeah. That 20 million loss on Andy Carroll, great business. Anyway, yeah. let's
Paulinho, go fuck yourself.
He said it, not me. So there we go. There's a transfer roundup for you there. Pretty comprehensive. That was pretty bumper. That was 40 minutes of transfer chat. So after this, we'll move on to the questions. So here we are with the questions then. We put the broadcast out on Twitter earlier. Some great questions flying in from everyone. Hundreds, thousands of comments flying in, at least. So, Andrew Goulin has asked about six questions.
About 90 questions
In the interest of fairness, I'll only ask one. Andrew Goulin wants to know, have Liverpool done the best so far in the transfer window? Having talked of Firmino there, they've signed Danny Ings, they've signed James Milner, who could forget Adam Bogdan, who they've also signed. So, Lawrence, do you think they've had a good transfer window so far?
The window's not even open yet, is it? Although, exactly. Isn't it open the day we release this?
Yes, open. July the 1st. So, technically, it is open now.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, for the signings, the money I've spent, I'd say that's it's a good start. I'm always going to stay with that. It's a good start. It's not, you know, they've got to make some more signings. Maybe two more signings this summer, I think, for Liverpool. And it will be a reasonable window. I still don't think it's as excellent as a couple of other people.
Reasonable.
I mean, United. Yeah, reasonable. I think Firmino, I don't think we can rate Firmino yet.
Well, what
because
about?
He's from Hoffenheim.
Klein as well, potentially added in.
Klein is a good addition because, you know, Liverpool have really lacked at right back. I think, you know, Liverpool will also be judged on the sale of Sterling in the transfer window and if they sell him or if not. And I also think if they do sell Sterling, then they'll probably be judged on the players they bring in to, in inverted commas, replace said player or the players they use, they get to buy the money with. So, yeah, let's see. That's what I'd say.
Let's see. Next question is from German Chicas Jr. at Chicas Jr. Dave, we'll send this one to you. Is Gerard Deulofeu, is that how you say his name?
Deulofeu. Watch a lot of the league, dear.
Is he a good signing for Everton?
I'd say yes. I think he was very good when he was at Everton. He looked very promising. I think he scored a goal that drew a game with Arsenal where he, you know, just came on. Absolutely fantastic goal. In terms of this season, it's not really worked out for him. He's been at Emirates Sevilla, and he got in the team at the start of the season, but then he just dropped out, and he played one game in the last, like, 18. You know, his statistical return isn't bad. 5 assists, 1 goal in 17 games. He likes to get a shot away, and obviously that can help Everton. Everton struggled a bit with goals this season, so that's, you know, a positive thing. He's a Roberto Martinez-type player, and I think he'll flourish under Martinez with a bit of freedom. Obviously, at Sevilla, they're quite compact, and the wingers have to do a lot of work, which didn't fit De La Feo at all. Definitely under Everton. You know, I liked him when he came to the Premier League. He was a nice, you know, short, technical player. Obviously, a lot likened to Lionel Messi. Obviously, he's not going to be Lionel Messi, but he's a good player, very good player for Everton, very good signing.
Excellent. Great question here from Luka Kolakusic.
At
Dream Shake. He says, make a prediction. Which club is next to win Serie A besides Juventus, and when will it be? That is a great question. A very tough question as well, because that is a team that dominates the league.
Have Inter made enough additions?
Or
are they making enough good? I mean, you know, Mancini's putting together a squad here that I don't know what level it can achieve, you know?
The thing is, I think Juve, they're probably going to win it again next year based on who they've signed so far, Mandzukic and Khedira. So who's going to be the next winner? It could be a couple of years down the line still. Roma and Lazio are up there challenging, aren't they?
I don't really feel like they pose any real...
Do you not think Roma are ever going to quite... They're not going to quite push it over the edge, you know?
It's just quite a challenge.
They've always been nearly...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Men, remember, haven't they? They always nearly win the title. I think they've won it once in the last 20 years or so. Obviously, don't quote me on that, but then that's in there. I think Inter Milan, I think AC Milan and Inter Milan are obviously going to come back big. You know, Inter Milan have got, as we mentioned, Roberto Mancini, in there. Obviously made a lot of different good signings. Going to take a season for those lads to gel. But I think next year, Inter will challenge for the title 100%. And whether Milan, I love AC Milan. I love the history of the club. I'd like them to come back. They've made some half-decent buys so far. They've got to clear out a lot of rubbish, like the likes of Alex, who's already gone. And you know, there's so many players in that squad that aren't really AC Milan standard players for the old AC Milan. I think they will come back. Maybe Inter Milan next season. Not this season, next season. And then AC Milan in 2 seasons' time, I'm going to go with bold prediction.
So you're basically going for the next one is Inter Milan a season or so's time. Lawrence, what are you going for?
That was my first thought. I'll probably stick with that.
Inter Milan, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
I think I'm going to say Roma, just because I'd like to see him win it. It's hard to see past Juventus anytime soon. And like you say, Roma are the nearly men, but it'd be good, wouldn't it?
It would be so lovely.
It's not going to happen before Totti retires, is it? He's 38 now, I think he's 38. He's already going to retire after this season coming, isn't he? But it would be lovely to see him win it. Next question is from Admiral Kizaru, who says, with Tottenham's improvements in defence, what do you think? Top four is realistic? Scoring goals isn't a problem for them, but conceding is. I'd say scoring goals is potentially a problem. You know, if Harry Kane gets injured next season, we're all in trouble. Spurs have signed Kevin Vimmer, who...
Sure.
I mean, I wouldn't say, you know, with those... with him as the improvement in defence, we're going to make the top four. I think there's a lot of improvements to be made throughout the squad. I mean, Jan Vertonghen he was a little bit hot and cold last season. Same with Fazio. Yunus Kabul, I've said, needs to get rid. So I think, you know, there's still significant improvements to be made in defence, you know, let alone holding on to Hugo Lloris for next season. At the moment, I can't see Tottenham making top four next season with Arsenal strong as they are at the moment, like we're saying with Petr Cech. Manchester United obviously making some great signings. Manchester City, who have actually signed anyone yet, but are probably going to get at least Sterling and probably a few more. Yeah,
I was going to say, it is a bit of a weird rebrand for City, isn't it?
Just
taking other people who already have an identity elsewhere and kind of trying to transpose that on.
Yeah, well, they need to get some
identity.
They need to do something, don't they? I think Tottenham are not going to finish in top four this season, but I'll be happy with another season of progress under Pochettino, fifth or sixth, and a Europa League run, and sort of build on that over the next few years and see what happens. I can't be too overly optimistic about next season when all the other clubs are doing so well to improve their squads, but I'll try not to get too down about it. FaZe Palwala says, who has the best youth system in the Premier League other than Southampton? Shout out to Pixel Dave. That must be because of your appearance on Full Time Devils this week.
I apologise. Terrible internet connection at my office.
There you go.
Who
has the best youth system in the Premier League other than Southampton? I would suggest, based on last season, maybe Tottenham. We had quite a few academy graduates coming through. Harry Kane, Ben Taleb, Ryan Mason. Any other shouts for good youth systems in the Premier League?
You'd say Chelsea at the moment. You know, they've got that sort of generation of players coming through, you know, Solanke and those lads. So, yeah, I'd say at the moment Chelsea are doing very, very well.
Any shouts?
What about Crystal Palace? Palace down the years have developed quite a few good young players and have brought quite a few young guys through. So, not a terrible... I know it's not of the same level, but, I mean, it is what they're developing for. So, you know, let's see. Liverpool don't have a terrible academy or record with developing youth. So, yeah, they've not had a great record with developing young defenders. And then, obviously, what about people like United?
Yeah, you know,
right now,
the interesting thing, not right now. I don't see, obviously, Pereira, I've mentioned before, is going to be top this year. Paddy McNair, I've given a shout out to as well, definitely going to come on with his game. It's interesting that we've not seen a lot of British talent. Obviously, Paddy McNair is British, but we've seen a lot of, you know, Brazilians that have come to United at a young age. It's quite interesting, like, what's sort of going on. You know, Tom Thorpe was sort of, you know, brilliant player, captain the under-21 side, coming through their youth team. We've sort of let him go. So at United, it's a bit interesting at the moment. I'd say you've got to look up for Man City as well, obviously spending the bucks on it. Their brilliant sort of academy system they got there. They've built a village for the players and that type of thing. But there's going to be no opportunity for those City players to get into the first team in the current style of Man City. So, you know, it's interesting. There's a lot of decent, but Southampton is definitely, like mentioned in the question, that streaks out at the moment.
It's hard to see by Southampton, isn't it? I mean, Chambers, Lallana, Theo Walcott, Gareth Bale. You know, you've got James Ward-Prowse now. Their youth system is pretty ridiculous, isn't it? Next question. Vuhandro Ortiz says, will we have a title race for the 2015-16 Premier League season? Yes.
Yes. I mean, there's always a race. Doesn't matter. Even if people lag behind.
I think it's going to be a good title race.
Yeah, I think it'll be good.
I think last season it was a bit of, it was almost a bit of a foregone conclusion with City sort of rather limply giving up the title. So next season, United coming back stronger. Arsenal maybe finally giving it a go. It should be a good one. At Richard B LFC says, in American sports, the only way to get players is free agency and trades.
Yeah.
Is this system the answer?
Is this system the answer? You have to cap wages.
Is this system the answer to the domination of money in football?
Yes, but it would have to be a worldwide system, and I think that's part of the fear, isn't it? Is that you know, because if you then do that in Europe and then say, you know, someone like Qatar decides that they just want to pump a load of money into it, then what do you do then? Because then if players go, I just want to earn a load of money, okay, cool. But then I guess if you're the best player in the world, I mean, I guess it's a problem, isn't it? Because Qatar might say to someone, you know, we just want to buy you, bring you out here and make the best league in the world. And if they get one player and then they build it up over time, it might be interesting. But I think there's fear that that would be a kind of, it works in theory, but it would be great if it worked in other ways as well. The thing about the strength of the NBA is basically because they did it first, they got ahead of everyone else, and now the draw is to do that. So you would have to be the first people to do it and get a lot of people on board who agreed with it. But the problem being that, you know, we live in a very different system, and, you know, the NBA and America offers a very different lifestyle to anyone else. It's a whole continent agreeing to it, essentially. So, yeah.
Interesting. Siraj Zubaydi, very quickly, he wants us to give our chances of Arsenal winning the league next season. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are Arsenal to win the league next season? Dave?
Should we put that in the bullshit bin?
No. I'm kidding. Dave, what do you think?
I'm going to go for 6.5. Sorry. Ooh. Sorry to use the extra decimal place, but yeah, I think they need to avoid the dodgy spell that they've shown for the past few seasons. They have a dodgy month or a dodgy 2 months. That's it. They avoid the dodgy months, then definitely, you know, they could win the league.
Lawrence, what are you giving it out of 10?
It's hard to look on Chelsea again, isn't it?
I'd go for a 7 myself.
You know what? Yeah, but doesn't 7 just seem like you're sitting on the fence and sort of like, yeah, mate.
I'll go for 8 then. You know what?
You're still sitting on the fence, mate. I want to hear like a 10 or a 0. Do you know what I mean?
No, sitting on the fence there. I'm going to go for 8. You've pushed me over the edge.
Lawrence, you really pushed me over the edge. What an extreme life we live. I'd say I'm going to go. I'll go 5. I'll go higher. 8. No, 9.
That's
no, 7.
Sitting on the fence.
It doesn't matter, really, does it? I think what we need to look at is how competitive they become within the top 4, and I think they will be very competitive. I think they'll finish above. The question will be, can they finish above where they finished last season? The answer is yes.
Great stuff. The next question is, with their signings, are Southampton and West Ham and Swansea good enough to get European places next season? Dave, what do you reckon?
I'm going to say one club yes, two clubs no. West Ham, no. I've mentioned before, Bilic, it's going to be a disaster at West Ham. Called it already. He's a terrible club manager with the resources that he's had under his belt. He's brilliant. He's been brilliant at Croatia. Won 65% of his games, but then you look at his win rates away from Croatia and club football, it's poor. So West Ham, no, they've signed Dimitri Payet, a 29-year-old, for 14 million, crazy money. Southampton, no, just because they're gonna have an issue with, again, players moving in and out. You know, they're still waiting to see what happens with the likes of Schneiderlin and probably other players that other teams will want to pick up. Swansea are the ones I'm going to go with that are going to push on this season. Gary Monk, I think, is a fantastic manager. He really sort of brought Swansea together again. They've got Gylfi Sigurdsson, that was fantastic last season. You know, I think they're definitely the ones. I think they've made some pretty decent signings so far in the window. So I reckon I reckon definitely Swansea.
Interesting.
Fair. George, Andre Ayward. Interesting. Brilliant signing.
Next,
Connor McDonough.
Said
Leicester finished 14th last season, but with the signings of Hoof, Okazaki, and Fuchs, can they push on and finish even higher?
Yes.
Boom. Yeah? Done.
I give it a nine.
I'm a massive Nigel Pearson fan. I know people hate him, but I just like him. I love his style of football. It's just a football sense for me. I think Okazaki, is an absolutely fantastic signing. Whenever I've seen him play in Germany, he just scores goals. He's a, you know, low centre of gravity, pretty decent at just putting the ball in the back of the net. You know, perfect for Leicester if they're going to continue this front three. Obviously, brilliant signing.
Oh, front three, Clarkson.
Reinforcing the defence with Hoof. And then Christian, what was it? Christian, how would you say his second name, Adam? Sorry. Lost it.
Fuchs.
Fuchs, yeah, Fuchs, you know, a player that would fit their wing-back system. He's a sort of player, a defender on the left-hand side, could play wing-back, left-back, left midfield. So, yeah, they're making some very good signings, and I hope they do.
Two more quick questions, because we're approaching the hour mark, if you want to move on to the talking points. At Cazorla Assist says, what makes a player world-class? Good question.
They score a lot of goals, or they're very good in their position. They probably play in a team where they are achieving and winning things.
Isn't world class always? I assume to me was like a class above the rest, as in the upper echelon of like the 10, 20, 30, just incredible world class players.
So what you're saying is, what do we mean by the term world class? I guess what we he could go anywhere in the world, and he would retain his quality because his quality seems somewhat innate to his game. That's also a subjective thing. You know, I mean, a lot of people are saying, you know, can Messi do it on a Wednesday, etc. There are probably good things he can do. There, it's what people value, and I think it's putting a value across. If you go to different countries, you'll see different values in their sports. And in football, those sports tend to be dictated by Europeans.
Speaking of which, you know, going abroad, you know, being able to maintain that class, that's what makes you world class.
Yep.
At AVFC Connor has done a very long-winded question here. I'll do my best to try and get it across. So, question I need answering by you guys that me and my friends have been arguing about for weeks.
Yeah.
So he says, ready. Okay, if you added Messi to a mid-table championship side, for example, Birmingham City, could he win them the league? My opinion is yes, because he scored 58 goals and assisted 28 goals. That means he would directly have been involved in 78 goals. Not sure if the math's right there. That's a Birmingham City and... pretty sure it does add up. That's Birmingham City and their top goal scorers. For me, he would have won them the league. He would add so much to their team, and he would win them the league.
I guess what you're assuming there is that his movement would be appreciated and seen in the same way.
I would say, you don't even have to assume is that he would not be surrounded by the same class of player. And although Messi is world class and an incredible talent and perhaps the best player we've ever seen, he does still rely on the 10 other players on the pitch, the goalie, the defenders, the midfielders, even Neymar and Suarez to supply him them balls. And you know, when you're talking about assists, you're relying on Neymar and Suarez to be the incredible players they are to make those runs. So I would argue, Connor, that no, he wouldn't win Birmingham the league because he wouldn't be surrounded by the same class of players who, even though he is an incredible talent himself, he still needs those players of that quality around him in order to perform at his peak.
I disagree. I think if you put Lionel Messi at Birmingham City, they'd win the league massively. It's the Suarez effect, okay? So you look at Liverpool when Suarez was there that season. Suarez is probably, you know, top five players in the world. Liverpool came second in the league.
Hmm.
I think when you're talking about Messi's assists, Messi could pick up, you know, he can put a ball on a sixpence. You know, he'll find these players and you'll
it doesn't
he'll
matter if
much,
you put the ball on a sixpence to someone who's not in.
You'll find Zigic, Nikola Zigic, who's not at Birmingham anymore. But let's say Zigic and Messi are playing together, right? Nikola Zigic would probably score 25 league goals that season because Messi would just pick him out constantly and it'd be fantastic. Obviously, you've got to look at the defence as well. That's a big factor. But I think when you've got these players of that ability, they basically give the rest of the players a massive boost. So they just become
but
a bit
surely,
better that season.
But
they're
surely
not confident.
Messi, as good as he is going forward, he's not going to stop the Birmingham City backline.
Yeah, but what Dave's saying is that it's the residual flotilla effect of having Messi there. And I think, you know, it's not just the direct effect of Messi out on the pitch. It's also that, you know, the same, it goes for, I think Dave picks out a very good, actually a really good case study in Liverpool having Suarez. The difference is that, you know, when Suarez arrived at the club, he wasn't known as a world-class player, and Liverpool did somewhat take his game a little bit further.
Yeah,
you could argue that may have been because they bought him just before he hit the right age. So, you know, they bought him at the right time. Either way, they still became a world-class player in that time. But the point would be that he had a big flotilla effect on the other players. So he made Coutinho a better player. He made Sterling a better player. He made Sturridge a better player. It's the same as Thierry Henry at Arsenal. You see the effect on Walcott. You see the effect on the other young players who watch his effect. They watch his ability. And they almost try and mimic that. Or they try and take the best aspects of that. And as the best managers will... probably, and that's why they talk about build a team around that.
I would agree with you to an extent, but you are talking about Liverpool and Suarez. You know, I could mention Gareth Bale and Tottenham. He elevated them to fifth place in the Premier League. But the specific question he's asking, specific hypothetical situation he's talking about is Birmingham City, who finished mid-table last season in the Championship. Do you think if you just plopped Messi in Birmingham's team, they would have won the Championship?
You know what?
I appreciate what you're saying about how a World Cup.
Sorry, I misread that. I thought they were going to win the Championship. If we're talking Premier League, it's a different kettle of fish.
The Championship, I mean the Championship title last
year. Yeah, no, 100%.
I think because you know, you look at the effect on Derby, you look at the effect on a number of other people who have had very short-term loans with very tenacious young players, and you think, well, what would happen if they put Messi in there? Yes.
I'd say no, but I thought that was a very good little discussion.
Yeah, top question.
And a very good question, very interesting question.
Theory.
Yeah, all incredibly hypothetical, but interesting nonetheless. So there you have it for the questions. That's all we've got time for this week. If you want to submit more questions, you can do so on Twitter at the Front Three or to our personal Twitters, I guess. But, you know, preferably at the Front Three, so they're all in one place. After this, we're going to move on to the talking points. So here we go to wrap up the show, the talking points. Each one of us is going to give three topics that we kind of want to have a little discussion about. Lawrence, you're up first. Hit us.
I covered Formula E at the weekend, which finished in London, was incredibly scintillating.
Did you say E?
Formula E, yes.
You know I love you, Lawrence. You know I love you.
You know I love you. Are you loving E?
Formula E, that is Formula
the,
E.
The
yeah.
Point, yeah, well, what's so, the formula for E? Right? Wow. The really great thing about Formula E is the marketing of it, that they call themselves entertainment. They don't necessarily call themselves a conventional race. And they've really looked at the way that other races have been, you know, institutions essentially, and institutionalized, and what negative effects that has. And they've still effectively they're still making money. That, you know, they're building a business. And you can say, well, you know, how green is it? But because, you know, they're flying around the world, et cetera, et cetera. But at least what I got from it was that they're effectively engineering an arms race within the motoring industry to develop better batteries, better longevity in the cars. You know, how much longer can they make tires run? How much better and more efficiently can they make a car run? How can they conserve energy? Those kind of things. And I think basically my question from that was this. If you could... not rebrand football, but if you were to reimagine it, and this is probably a bigger question than the end of this podcast, but if you were to reimagine it, what would you do in reimagining football that would make football a better and more enjoyable thing? Because I looked at Formula E and Formula One and the other things, and I saw families enjoying it, I saw rich people enjoying it, I saw poor people enjoying it, I saw all these different people in the park, and it made it so much more accessible. And people still love the racing. They still had all the things they love about Formula One, apart from the power and those kind of essentially the ego-based things. And they were promoting something that was green, they were making something that would effectively be much better for everyone, and making it into a branding exercise that, you know, I know it's a big branding, Virgin's in it, all these different rich people are in it, but still there's something there which makes it a better place to be.
It's a very big question. It's a very tough question. I mean,
this is a question for the commenters as well. Yeah. Leave it in the comments below. But what do you guys want?
I think when you're talking about that sort of almost fostering that, I don't know, that atmosphere, almost, it sounds like you're talking about. I think it is, obviously, we talk about money being a problem in the game. I think it's easy to come back to, but I still think ticket prices and all this sort of stuff. I think I think Premier League clubs should make a massive amount of tickets free for younger people every season. And I think the atmosphere around the games and the whole, I don't know, the whole perception of the game would just change.
It's a good start.
I would like for clubs that are developing young players, I'd like there to be a ban on players moving before they're 21 at every level.
Ooh.
I think that, you know, after you're 21, okay, you've been taught there, you've learnt there, you've given a bit back to the club. And I think that'd be quite nice in terms of, you know, you're looking at potentially some Eastern European nations, some African nations that have some really good domestic teams, and then the league could get more competitive. And again, going back to Adam's point of ticket sales and that type of thing, you're going to get more young people into the game in these, you know, whatever countries in England as well. And it's more, I don't know, it's going back to the whole, the model where, you know, the team that used to support back in the day, like Man United, all the players have come from Manchester. Obviously, it's not like that, but I quite like the whole, like, you know, you're defending your realm in a way, you're going out to perform for your fans in the local area. But I think that the cap on players being sold at that level would sort of bring that back a bit. That's what I would do anyway. Obviously, can't happen because it's money involved, but that'd be nice.
Or at least a quota of how many need to be in the team. Because, you know, the counterpoint that I would have to that is that I actually quite enjoyed Liverpool having Spanish players like Pepe Reina, Xabi Alonso, Fernando Torres, because those guys seem to understand the culture a bit.
Yeah, and they all came after they were 21. I think all those players developed at the club that they started at, and then they moved on. And that's what you can do. It's a free market. You can move where you want, but I think there's got to be a restriction of when you can move, like, you know, age-wise.
Yeah, well, I thought that's why it was interesting that earlier we mentioned trades and you know, caps and those sorts of things. I thought that would be quite an interesting theory in the league. And maybe, you know, what Formula E has basically done, it said, you know, I think, you know, they acknowledge and they seem like quite an open leadership set, if you like. I know I'm probably looking at rose-tinted glasses, but at least let's try and be positive about it. I think, you know, something like trade, something like wage caps, those kind of things would be an interesting way to go. Also looking at maybe not accepting players before a certain age, and therefore the draft system would work. You know, how young can you bring a player in and how exceptional is that? And then, you know, making sure that people develop off the pitch as well as on it. And I think the NBA and people in the States do it much better than people in the UK, because they almost have a social responsibility, if you like. Barcelona seems to do that. You know, they educate their kids to a certain level. And I think that gets them a certain level of commitment, maybe sometimes, that means that they either want to repay them or, you know, they feel an affinity towards the club in a very real way. And, you know, I think that that's probably worth exploring. Because, you know, then that means that when people pump money into the game, there's something which maybe could trump money, which is a much more long-term view. You know, if you educate people to a certain level, you educate them to a level where they become intelligent enough not to, or have the critical mind in order not to just need money. But, you know, maybe I'm being idealistic.
Great stuff. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Well, let's just end there then.
Yeah, that's because we can't move on to, you know, the more important point, which is mine, obviously. No, I kid. I just wanted to talk about the Women's World Cup. Basically, we have not, as far as I know, unless you mentioned it last week, we haven't talked about it once.
Go on then.
And it's been on for a month. And we haven't talked about it. Why do you think that is? Footballing podcast, literally the World Cup is on.
Yeah,
we haven't even talked about it. Have either of you guys watched any games?
A couple, but I think that's also part of it, is that it's a completely different sport.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it.
It is a completely different sport, yeah. Have you not been watching the England games?
Some of. I got to be honest, I've quite enjoyed having a little break from just covering football as intensely as normal.
I think that's a good point. I always look forward to, as someone who does football work stuff, I do actually look forward to the summer in terms of having a break from football, so you can get excited about, you know, the pre-season, and, you know, when the new season comes around, you're excited to see football again. So
exactly. Maybe I've just watched it with a less critical eye and therefore not been able to really comment on it on a podcast.
Yeah, but Dave, you watching?
What would you like to say?
Well, I was just wondering why. I was sort of wondering why we sort of touched on there, but so the Women's World Cup hasn't actually got a massive amount of coverage, I'd argue, in what I've seen in the media. BBC aside, because BBC's obviously got the rights to it and they're pushing it hard, which is commendable. But
commendable.
Yes.
They're doing the bare. You know, that's the bare minimum, essentially. I see what you're saying.
Minimum would be mentioning it, not giving it. You know, doing highlights on and games on BBC One, doing highlights packages online every day.
I see what you're saying. I just wonder whether we should be saying it's commendable. I mean, you know, the other day there was this article
it doesn't get any coverage, the Women's World Cup, I'd argue, apart from the BBC, who are pushing it hard, which is a good thing.
Yeah, okay. I think that, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Please do keep going.
Dave, have you watched any of the England games or any Women's World Cup?
I've been struggling. Obviously, I've worked full time for the massive Squawker Boys, and the thing that's been difficult for me this summer is obviously the Copa America. I've wanted to watch. I've watched quite a few of those games. But similarly with the Women's World Cup, those games have clashed, and they've also been on at sort of ridiculous times. Obviously, the game on Thursday is on at 1 o'clock. 12 o'clock kicks off. It's difficult to work a 9 to 5 and watch these things. In my personal opinion, now I do like women's football. It's brilliant that the ladies are getting as far as they are. I used to actually coach women's football at university, so I'm massively on that. Nice. It's a fantastic thing. It's bringing the nation together, but it's just one of those things where I'm finding it really difficult to watch games. Obviously, with the Copa and then with the under 21s tournament in Europe, it's just the football at the moment is either at weird times or is at sort of the wrong times for me.
So obviously England they've done very well. They're through to now the semi-finals. They're playing technically tonight when this goes out, or early Thursday morning against Japan. As you say, it's starting to get a lot of coverage at the moment because they're doing so well. There's sort of this aspect of pride to it. They're doing better than the men's team have ever done.
Yeah.
Talk of it being, England football's greatest achievement for 20, 25 years. I mean, do you buy into that, Lawrence? Are you sort of, do you think it's a little bit, I don't know what the word is, almost hollow, almost?
It comes across a little bit disingenuous, I guess. And, the people are only there for the success, I guess, is part of it. But you would also have to say that if that's the way that the media is operating, probably because their view is that they want to cover success or those kind of things, or it's also because of the very quick turnaround of the media. It's very difficult to construct a narrative about things that you don't really know about very much, and it's much easier to do that within men's football because they feel like there's a very common language which we've constructed over years to do with football, and therefore we can quickly make very easy articles out of that and very quick content, and it's very easy to just sit down four guys or three guys and just sort of talk about football for a little while and relatively fumble your way through. But if you don't know the names, you don't necessarily know some of the people in there, you don't know some of the culture, it's also, you've got to remember, slightly disenfranchising for all of the people who usually have a stranglehold on football, to then be told, well, hold on a minute, there's a whole load of new people, in inverted commas, not new in that sense, but emerging talents who don't agree with your old mothball idea of football. And, they want to see more young, hip, happening people on TV who have different races, sexes, and, all sorts of things. And for some people, that's a little bit scary because it threatens their position within the game.
I've only been watching England games, to be honest. I haven't watched any other games apart from England, but it's actually been quite enjoyable. It is almost like you say, it's almost like a different sport in some ways. It's kind of like men's tennis and women's tennis. There's like big differences between the two.
Then let me say this. There was a fascinating comment on Claire Balding's show. She asked Pat
Nevin?
No, not Nevin. he was a tennis player. Pat
Cash.
Why is there such a drive for women to play five games? And why do you think women should be? It's right that women are paid less because they. And he said, well, they play less, and he said that. But the interesting side of that is that when he spoke to some older female tennis players and said, do you think women should play five games? They said, no, but we don't think the men should play five. We think they should play three, and it would make the game way more interesting. And I guess that's the point, is that because we build up men's football as the pinnacle, and that's what we teach people to appreciate, we always think, right, how can we upgrade it to make it, we think we can make it more like men's football. No, appreciate it for what it is and see what you can get in your own sport.
They're completely different because obviously women's football doesn't have the infrastructure, the money, the interest that men's football has. I think women's tennis has almost grown in unison with men's tennis.
Yeah, because they are doing the same tour, which is really worth saying. And when you're walking hand in hand with something that's already popular, that's fantastic.
Exactly. So, like I say, it's a very different sport for various reasons.
But there are institutionalized problems there.
Exactly.
Keep women out of the game.
But I'm glad it's getting the coverage it's getting now. Hopefully that encourages more.
It's not on this podcast, eh?
Yeah, but I just thought it was interesting. We have not even mentioned it once. It's been on for almost a month now, but it's time to hop on the bandwagon, seeing as England are doing well. Hopefully, we'll talk about it more next week if England do get through to the final, which we sort of have to talk about, really, and do our research.
If they don't, slag them off.
Well, it's just been very entertaining so far. Like I say, it's a different sport, but fingers crossed for tonight that England can beat Japan. So that's my talking board done. Women's World Cup. Dave, you're up next. What have you got?
I think I might explode. I might go on a bit of a rant here. I apologize.
I'm looking forward to that.
Before we go on,
I like it.
Just going to meet up and buckle in.
There's a big question, and it's about the men's team. Of course, the women are doing fantastic, which is brilliant. But the men's team are absolutely pathetic at the moment. I'm just going to say it out loud. You know, the under 21s didn't even get out of their group at the European Championships. It, you know, look at the style of football they were playing, and it was just absolute rubbish. It was just so bad. And I just want to, you know, the question open to you guys, which I'll re-ask after I've gone on my rant, is why are England so rubbish at international level? And where's the development? And for me, it all goes back to bringing in Graham Taylor. If you don't know, Graham Taylor was managing Watford. He took them through the divisions from probably the equivalent of the League Two back in the day to the Premier League. So they came from the bottom to the top quite quickly. It was revolutionary. Everyone was like, this is when tactics were developing in a way where, you know, there were the long ball game versus the, you know, short passing game. Graham Taylor brought in, it was a long ball game, but there was pressing involved, and it was fun. You know, it was good at that time around the 80s. Got them to the Premier League, and they did all right. But then the FA brought him in, and he was technical director for a long time. He's setting his eye, you know, it seems like he was setting his ideologies that he enjoyed the long ball football, you know, scouting in this country and coaching, all looked at players that are big, that are physically developed or are really quick. And we're missing the Paul Scholes players that Paul Scholes, you know, nearly didn't make it at Man United. You know, imagine if that had happened. Ridiculous. But anyway, I think this goes down to the coaching pyramid. I think it's absolutely awful in the country at the moment. So as a football fan, I absolutely love football and I'd love to do my coaching badges. There's two problems here that sort of stop me. Firstly, the cost. You look at, so basically what you want to get to as a football coach to get to a decent level is you want a UEFA B. So basically you've got to do, in England, you've got to do two levels, then you'll get to do the UEFA B. And then there's a UEFA A, and then you become a full-time coach and you get a pro UEFA license. So to do the courses to get to sort of the UEFA A, so you've done UEFA B, you've got to spend around 1,300 quid, which is absolutely ridiculous. That is a lot of money. Then you look at, so I'm telling you the barriers to enter are very, very difficult. Then you look at who you're going to learn off to become a really good coach. You look at England and you look at the number of players. So what I'm going to talk about in a sec is the number of UEFA B license coaches in a country, UEFA A license coaches in a country, and the UEFA Pro license. In the UK, there's 3,000 of these coaches in total. In France, there's nearly 17,500. In Germany, there's 35,000. In Italy, there's 29,000. And in Spain, there's 23,000. Spain seems a little low, but you look at Spain and they've got the most UEFA A license. So they've got the sort of like the championship style coaches. They've got the most of them. And I think we are so far behind in the game at the moment. It's ridiculous. And why are these entries so big? And that's why I think that is the problem with English football at the moment, is the coaching. What do you guys think?
That was good stuff. I don't know enough in depth about the sort of the coaching methods, about the structure they have in the England setup. To tell you, it seems like you know a lot more than me, Dave. It sounds like you're the expert.
Well, I'd love to do it, but the barriers to entry, that you've got to pay. Level one is £165. And that is just to get on the ladder. So you do your level one, and then you can go into like doing level one goalkeeping coach, level one coaching disabled footballers, level one coaching adult footballers.
Does the FA not subsidise this sort of stuff?
Well, yeah. You know, this is the thing. They may subsidise it. They signed a deal with the great people at McDonald's that do, you know, go in from time to time and let, you know, okay. They do pay for people's coaching courses, but it's just not there at all. You know, though, going back to those numbers again, 3,000 coaches compared to like 20,000, 30,000, all the key European nations. It's just pathetic.
It is quite stark, and it is quite obvious what the problem is. Like you're saying, it is that grassroots, it is the training structural aspect of it. But it just seems like, I don't know, it seems like it's so hard to fix. It doesn't seem like there's any easy answers in terms of the Football Association seems like this quite unwieldy, huge organisation sort of bogged down in bureaucracy and all this sort of stuff. Because when I feel like we've heard about, we realise what the problem is for the last, I don't know, what, 5, 6, 7 years people have been talking about this is the problem. And what has been done about it? Pretty much nothing. They built St. George's Park, maybe?
Well, I mean, that is a positive move, at least.
Yeah, great, it's positive.
But I mean,
and it's good in the sense that also they built it away from.
But they didn't have a golf course, Lawrence, on there. You know, that's the biggest problem. There was no golf course. Gerard wasn't happy, was he?
Well, I mean, institutionally, yeah, that works. I guess there then you also have to say, you know, what else can you do in terms of approach, attitude, those kind of things, and. You know, is there a different approach to football in other countries? And you probably say, yes, again, there is. You know, there's a lot more thought, I think, that goes around it. And people are much less chastised for wanting to intellectualise something.
Well, I mean, what happened to the big report that Greg Dyke, who is the head of the FA, what happened to that big commission report that he released?
It came out with very obvious conclusions that most people sort of went,
yeah,
you wrote a report on things that are obvious there.
I mean, have they done anything to implement them, or is there any news about?
I think it became a bit of a self-congratulations sort of thing. That was like, we found what the problems are, and we think we're addressing them. But I also think that the issue may also be that, you know, that it takes time to address some of these issues because.
That was a year ago now, and.
Well, I mean, to be fair to them, they are doing things like, you know, building St. George's Park. They're probably, it's also a slight issue that we don't have as many institution clubs that are maybe reaching out to people in the same way. Or maybe it's a select few that then only want to get to the very top of the game. I mean, you know, it's not a terrible thing to stop at a certain level and realise what you can do there.
Wow.
I've just Googled the report quickly. Quite frankly, I've read the executive summary quickly. It's all rubbish. It's all talking about players and being like, you know, how are we going to get more players at this level to come through? And it just seems like they're missing the point.
Yeah. Wooden trees.
Yeah.
What do you make of if I said, well, people who say that the problem with England is the Premier League in terms of it's divorced from the Football Association over here, isn't it? The Premier League is its own, it's its own thing, isn't it?
It's rampant Thatcherism.
Well, it broke away from the Football League, right? And it's sort of, it's not really subject to FA oversight, is it?
To some extent it is. But the irony would also be then if, say, I don't know, they then when people want to break away from it, they go, well, you can't do that. And so it's really safety and money for the Premier League is what they've built. And, you know, they've built that alongside other people. And, you know, the NBA and other people have tried to do that. But they've done it in a sense that then they feel like they're giving back.
It seemed like a lot of the ideas that he came up with were sort of trounced straight away almost. Do you remember the B teams idea, Premier League B teams?
Yeah, but then that's the problem is that you can't just give an answer and think that's good enough.
Got shot down anyway, so it was
because it's not a system that's going to work.
Fair enough.
There are better solutions out there. If you've just commissioned a report, and the problem is that it's another one of those institutional issues, and people said that, and we all said this at the time, it's another institutional issue where, I mean, holy shit, if you'd have just come to some bloggers and gone, guys, what's the problem in the game? They'd have given you better answers than that. So what? Why didn't you ask those people? Oh, because you had to ask experts who say what? Who say the same things they've been saying for years, who will say this. And that's not me discrediting the people in the report, but it's me saying, think outside your normal box and don't just go to the same old people.
It's mental. I'm just looking at the report now. I've not seen it before. It's absolutely mental what they're saying. They're saying that the problem is there's not enough English players starting in the Premier League. Is that the issue? That's nowhere near the issue. There's no players starting in the Premier League because they're not good enough to play at that level. And that's the issue, but maybe they're not getting the chances because they're not good enough.
And but they're calling about... it's a chicken egg, though, isn't it, Dave? I mean, they're saying
short term, you have to.
Yeah, they're not starting in the Premier League. That's the problem. Well, no, the problem is that you're not giving the Premier League a problem where they have to choose English players. The problem is the Premier League is saying, look, we've got better options, so we're going to go with those.
Yeah, I do think things. I think that's like a short term option. You know what I mean, so long term, obviously, improve the academy so the players are better themselves.
Yeah.
But I do think short term, if you could boost the number of homegrown players in squads and in starting 11s, it would help for young players to get that exposure. You know what I mean? You look at Harry Kane this season; he starts in the first team for the first season and. Look at him go. But the problem is, it just seems like it's mired in just impossible, tangled webs. I mean, look at the homegrown players at the moment. You've got people like Alex Song, who count as homegrown players. Yeah. Gael Clichy is another one. So I don't, in terms of the national team, it doesn't help at the moment. So there needs to be some sort of, I don't even know, there needs to be some overhaul. But then all these things get promised and they never get followed through on, do they?
Crazy. Mm.
There you go. What a lovely note to end this week's podcast. A nice, happy, optimistic note.
We gave you zero, literally zero solutions. Just a load more issues.
I'm going to change it. I'm going to do the coaching. Sort that stuff out.
I'm not clever enough or, in a place to make solutions, Lawrence. I'm just in the position where I can come on a podcast and just moan about stuff.
And just
talk. Give no solutions whatsoever. Yeah. So guys, thank you very much for listening this week. Hope you enjoyed. It's a bumper episode. We're at almost an hour and a half now.
So it's
a big, big episode.
I'm so sorry.
sorry to subject you to all that. So guys, where can the people find more of your work, Lawrence?
At Lozcast, LOZCAST. Go online and you can find me, lozcast.com.
And Dave?
At Squawker Dave on Twitter. Follow it if you haven't. I just want to give a shout out to my followers. And we've just come over the 7,600 followers. So cheers.
Oh, really?
Guys. Thanks a lot.
I crossed 2K this week. So
that's a shout out.
Doesn't mean anything, but thanks for following me. Adam, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood. I have 888 followers right now. So, I'm lagging behind you guys significantly, but I love every single one of them. They're awesome.
It's not about number. It's about what you do with them.
Yeah, Dave. No, well done. Anyway. Also, you can, if you're on YouTube, you can find me at The Football Republic, which is the new channel I'm helping set up. Lawrence is on there quite a lot. And hopefully we're going to have Dave on next week.
Hopefully.
Taking on the True Geordie, which will be exciting.
In love, Dave.
It'll be interesting to see if Dave can beat the True Geordie. I am going to say, I put money on Dave to beat him.
You know what?
He's got the stats.
I'm putting money on a 6-0 win to Dave.
That's
all I'm saying, all right?
Okay. Well, okay, we can't have that. But
no. All I'm saying is...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Yeah, you're right, because people are betting on it. I'm putting money on a 12-0 win today.
Mathematically impossible. I'd love to see it. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to this week's show, and we'll see you next week.